The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Megan Metzger. She's a founder and CEO of a company called Decode 42. Megan, how are you?
Good morning. Great. Well, thanks for having me.
We're trying to decode what your company is all about and how it can help my listeners. My listeners are federal IT professionals. They go to work at 9 o'clock in the morning. By 9:15, they're about to jump out the basement window. And I have other listeners who are actual contractors themselves. And I have a lot of students and startups that listen to this broadcast. So we'll talk more about your background and what Decode 42 is all about. And I think what you've done here is you stumbled on something that is very, very creative. What we have is a federal government full of problems in information technology, trying to go to the cloud, worrying about security, worrying about encryption. What the heck is blockchain? How can it help me? What about startups? Can I use them? Can I not use them? I'm sick of my vendor. Who else I can use? And so what you've done is you stepped into the situation and given people some options and choices and shown them maybe, hey, have you considered this? You might want to consider. It's kind of like going to a smorgasbord.
Yeah, sure.
It's a wide range of ideas and new companies that might be able to help my listeners. And that's why I brought you in the studio, just to give them a clue, toss them a bone, tell them a little about your organization and how you can help them, and talk about Decode 42 and your background. Please, Megan.
Sure. So, you know, I've been in the federal government IT space for quite a while now, and I won't tell you how long in particular, but, you know, through the course of the years, just a little bit on my background. I started out at a large government contractor, you know, building software for the Army Reserve and the Army National Guard. And that was kind of my entrance into that. But deep in my heart, I am an entrepreneur and a small business advocate, you know, through and through. So I left that company and joined several other folks, and we started an IT professional services company focused solely on the government. And we grew that. I was the chief strategy officer there. So we grew that organization from the five of us to 70 rather quickly, less than a year or so. And in there, we were doing everything from supporting agencies on large IT modernization projects. I actually spent a lot of time supporting some agencies in writing the procurement and the actual contracts to buy that technology. So I've understand the pain that an agency goes through when trying to develop their requirements on what IT should they actually buy. And after that company, went to another firm where I was the chief operating officer, and we were working with emerging technologies on some really, really interesting problems. And what I found in that situation is even when you had a very specific problem to bring a technology into, the culture gap, the business gap, and even just the technology gap and understanding between the private sector emerging technologies and the federal government was pretty large. So we, just as a byproduct of trying to be successful on those projects, we ended up teaching them things about, you know, procurement 101 and how do you stay out of trouble and don't take a government employee golfing on the weekends, you might get sideways. And there's so many nuances of working in the federal government that it just became obvious to me that if we want to start attracting better technology and emerging technologies that aren't going to traditionally look at the government market, we have to think a little bit more like they do. And some of that is just tell me what I need to do and how to get there quickly. And I know most of your listeners are very familiar with the government market. So if you ever step back and pretend for a second that you don't have a clue and just try Googling, how do I do business with the federal government? It's like trying to file your own tax reform. You're going to go down a million different pathways trying to get there. So the idea behind what we do is really just accelerate that process for companies, emerging technology companies that we think could truly impact and change the way that the government runs. On the flip side of that, I find that agencies and even the prime contractors and the IT service providers are also looking for that technology that they can take to their agencies or take to their customers, and they perceive there to be a barrier in the reverse because they might be riskier or they might not understand how their organization works. So we sit there right in the middle to help connect all of these groups. So I'm excited to hear you talk about your audience here, because I think every single person listening today has a role in what we do. So the program itself is an accelerator program where we run it based on different topics and themes. So one of them, you mentioned blockchain. We're about to launch our blockchain cohort. And it's a competitive process. Companies apply. We We accept anywhere from 6 to 10 technologies at a time, and then it's everything they need to know about government, helping them with their IT strategy, their go-to-market strategies, and then making sure that there's exposure for the government, for the prime contractors, and for the technologies to understand each other and have opportunity to work together.
So the name of the organization is Decode 42, and if you want to find more information, I'll give the URL. It's decode42.com. So it's D-C-O-D-E, numeral 4, numeral 2.com. And what will they find there?
Oh, well, you'll find our upcoming programs. So you'll see some description about how we actually run, what it is we actually do. And then you can see a list of all the programs that we've done in the past. We've got some fantastic alumni companies that have come through the program. Some of them you probably have even heard their names at this point. And then you'll see what we have going on next year. And we're always running events. And we have some demo days that are coming up. We have 2 more demo days for the end of the year. One's around developer tools and platforms, and others around fintech and blockchain. And so check it out. And we already have registration open for a lot of those. So you're welcome to go to the website, see an event that looks interesting, and join us.
Well, most people in town here have heard of 1776, and most people have heard of WeWork, and there's shared workspaces, there's incubators, there's accelerators, I'm confused. Toss me a bone.
Too.
Tell me, so what is the difference? What's the different flavor here,
Yeah, so a very simplistic description would be an incubator typically doesn't have a time cap. So you can join the organization, they'll offer courses, it's really more about the community and the space that you're sitting in. And you can stay there a lot of times indefinitely or, until you've launched your business to a point where you can outgrow that space. A co-working space, there's the WeWork downtown where you have organizations, fairly large. I think, folks like Microsoft might have an office down there. I'm not positive on that. But then also a one-man show. So those are just going to be, places where you can co-locate and have access to resources. The accelerator is typically time-boxed. So
that's the differentiator.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we, our program is 3 months in duration and there is a graduation point.
So you'd be classified as an accelerator then?
We are an accelerator. Okay. Yep. And so, there's a kickoff, there's a graduation point, and then they roll into our alumni network and our alumni
program. So is that
program.
Called a cohort? Is that a term that you use to describe?
Yep.
So you'd have a half dozen companies and you'd kind of take them through a 3 months program and then shove them out.
Yep. And we always say we decide when we no longer engage with you. So we have a very active alumni community. And so we do ongoing education. We do events and are constantly bringing back our alumni as speakers. And it's more of a family type environment. And the one other nuance between our accelerator program and even some other accelerators that you'll find around the country is because of the nature of what we do, which is focused solely on the federal government, we don't require our companies to move here. So you'll here, some of them will require them to locate in their city for the 3 month period or whatever the duration is. Our companies are coming from across the entire country, so they'll come to town 3 times. But other than that, we encourage them to join one of the co-working spaces, like an Eastern Foundry that's focused on government and some of the great communities here.
In July, my wife and I drove cross country to Oklahoma, and I was in a small town in Oklahoma, Norman, Oklahoma. And if I walked up to someone at a business meeting in Norman, and I said, hey, why don't you do business with the federal government? They'd probably hit me with a chair.
Sure.
And after they hit me with a chair, they'd say, John, it's a time and resource black hole. It's stupid. I'm not gonna spend a year trying to figure this out. And so what do you tell your startups that say, yeah, we'd like to do business with the federal government? Do you say yes, no, or here's how?
Well, the first thing we do is ask why.
Oh.
I think you really do need to have some conviction about why you want to go into this market. The goal behind Decode 42 is make that simpler and get there faster. But at the end of the day, it is it's a time commitment. You can't really dip your toe and dabble in government if you want to make it an actual market for you. So we ask why. And, if the response is, well, I hear there's a lot of money there and I want to go get some of that money because I need it, we're probably not going to accept you into the program. We are a security company and there are real mission problems to solve and we feel that we can really make a difference there and we know that we have some interest, we fit the use cases very well, then it's a shoo-in. So the other thing that we also do is we will, part of the application process is talk to their leadership team to understand if they really know what this market's about. you know, are they prepared for if it takes a little bit longer, you know, maybe a year or 2 years before you see that real revenue coming in? Are you okay with that? And, you know, if you're trying to sell your company in the next 6 months, maybe don't look at the government as your market.
I think that, you know, creative solutions are not distributed geographically in the United States, nor are they distributed ethnically. I think there's people in who knows, in Dubuque, who may have a creative idea about encryption that we never thought of here, and they've got to be able to serve the federal government some way, and may, you may be able to provide a vehicle for them to do that. Let's take a little break, come back. We'll talk more about Decode 42 and startups in the federal government and how creative ideas can be brought into the federal government. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of Decode 42. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of Decode 42. That's D-C-O-D-E, numeral 4, numeral 2.com. Why did you get that name? I mean, Decode 42, is this like a code word that you and your friends have about a joke or something? So what is this all about?
No, you know, way too much thought went into it. But so in 1842, Samuel Morris.
Everyone just turned off the radios right there. Give me a hand out the pillows.
I know. But the long and short of it is he, after several years, finally convinced the government to let him demonstrate his single line telegraphic in Congress.
And he had innovation. It was hard for him to show the government innovation, right?
It was.
Samuel F.B. Morse, we know.
And he figured out how to decode working with the government.
Decode,
so
got it.
We like to say if you can decode the government, you can really change the world. I think I've said that to you before, but you know, that's how we got Morse code and the telegraph. So it really just kind of shows that there's tremendous opportunity if you can work there. And then, of course, it's DC's ode to the number 42.
Yeah. So. And if you're listening to this now and you're a small startup sitting in Silver Spring and you have this great idea that can save the government money and you're beating your head against the wall, well, guess what? They were doing that back in the 1840s, exact same thing. Innovation, the federal government had challenged.
Change.
So the whole idea was back then they didn't have you.
I know, if only. And I'm probably glad I live in this current century.
Yeah, me too. Especially for the dental work. I would hate when it'll go through that stuff. So Decode 42, it's an incubator, as you stated earlier, for companies that have innovative ideas targeted at the federal government or just general?
So we actually look for companies that are disrupting other markets. So, and then that they could really apply that technology to the federal government versus someone that built a technology specific for federal government. Not to say we won't work with those individuals, but what we're trying to do is bring in technologies that other groups, so think the financial sector or healthcare or, you know, just large enterprises. What are they doing? Because they can innovate oftentimes a lot faster than the federal government. Take those best practices, take those technologies, and bring it to the government market.
You listened to a podcast you were on, and I wrote down this quote. Here's a great quote from you. What may be wildly successful in the private sector may not translate. And it takes someone who's been beat up a few times to understand that and realize what may fit and what may not fit. And that's where you walk in, because you've seen a lot.
I have seen a lot. And maybe it's Stockholm syndrome that I keep working with the government, but I think that the government has no shortage of amazing and interesting problems to solve. And a lot of the technologies being built for private sector can fix and solve some of those. So we've talked about blockchain. You know, a lot of people think that's Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, but there's applications of it. I know a company that is working with the country of Dubai to actually distribute their welfare payments and make sure that there's integrity in that process. So there's examples of some, you know, really transformational, revolutionary technologies that could impact the government. And then there's also some best practices and technologies for really, really boring stuff. I mean, I'm talking about applying artificial intelligence to a day-to-day activity of copying and pasting from Excel spreadsheets that could also save the government a tremendous amount of money. And so when you look at the innovation spectrum in government, there's everything from Excel spreadsheets to what I jokingly say is shark laser beams. And so the primary difference in why sometimes it won't translate is if your security standards aren't, you know, going to match up with the compliance requirements of the government, or, you know, sometimes if you're focused on a business to consumer, that doesn't translate well. Sometimes your culture won't line up, but that's part of what we help with. And there's just a number of factors that go into whether or not you can really affect this market.
So let's say you're sitting in Walpole, Massachusetts, and you got an idea that is the perfect fit for helping someone at the FCC. I know some people over there. And so it's like a match game, you know, the old data. How do you match them? How do you connect them? And I think there's blame on both sides, you know. The person up in Walpole, Massachusetts may not know how to do business with the federal government. However, the federal government may not be very good at articulating what their problem is. And so you have to see it from both sides, don't you? You have to say, well, here's the people at Interior, and they have this problem, and they are not articulating it in a way that the guy in Walpole could solve. Both sides.
Yep. No, we have this conversation often. You know, we work closely with a number of government agencies, and a lot of times they ask us, what are some of the biggest things that we can do to really start attracting emerging tech? And you're exactly right on requirements and the way that you're articulating your needs is a huge problem. So a couple of the good news is there's some easy solutions. So one, I like to jokingly say, but I'm also serious. If you've got more than five acronyms in the first paragraph, you've lost your audience.
It's the five acronym rule. Yeah. But that's in Strunk and White, I guess, huh?
Yeah, there we go. But the biggest thing with emerging technology and the government is we find that a lot of times agencies don't know these types of technology exist. So they're writing their requirements based on the world that they know. So the example would be, tell them that you want to go to the moon. Don't tell them that you need the rocket ship with two boosters and get very specific on how that should be done. So what problem are you trying to solve? Because you might be surprised at what technologies can come out of the woodworks that you had no idea existed that could actually solve your problem in a very different way. So that's from the government side. And then when we're working with the technology companies, you know, you're not selling your technology because technology is not innovation. It's how you use it and what you do with it. So what can agencies do with the tech? What problem can they actually solve? It's one thing to say, I've got a widget and this widget writes. It's another thing to say, this writing widget can now help you draft millions of documents a thousand times faster, or whatever the outcome is. So help them understand why it benefits the government to actually work with your tech, not just that it's sexy and cool.
So Bloomington, Indiana is a town I lived in for a couple of years. And so let's say there's a startup in Bloomington and they try to sell the federal government. I know what they're going to say. They're going to say, oh, this compliance stuff, I'm fed up with it. I'm just going to go knock on someone's door next door. Why should I worry and spend a month on compliance? Another drag to doing business with the government, isn't it? Especially for a startup.
Yeah. We could probably do a whole series just on compliance in the government and, you know, some of the challenges that it creates for companies. But I think one thing that we like to really help companies understand is if you can work with the federal government, your ability to translate into other industries is going to be very, it's going to translate nicely. So if you can say that my technology was secure enough to work with the Department of Defense, then you can probably take that to some other regulated industries and you kind of have that gold seal. Now, you know, we can have a conversation about whether or not the regulations around a lot of technology are conducive to bringing in emerging tech. Sometimes I think they can be very prohibitive and not always up to date with some of the latest tech. And even, you know, I'll take encryption as an example. You know, we're still asking companies to be compliant with an encryption module that's fairly outdated. But, you know, it's worth it. If you can, it's the castle moat scenario where if you get to the castle, you figure out how to get past the crocodiles of working with the government and understand compliance and understand the systems to register in, you know, there's a lot for the taking on the other side of that.
Now, the problem, of course, is this. Let's go a different part of the, let's go to Clewiston, Florida, and right. Megan Software, and she decides she has a good solution for an encryption problem. Maybe it's secure messaging for the federal government. And she figures out that it's worth it and that she understands the compliance process. It's going to take her 2 years before they get any money coming in, and she's going to be starving. So so you're really betting in the long haul here. I mean, where you can go next door and sell something, waiting 2 years for federal money to come in, that can cripple a small company.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had a golden
ticket. You don't have all the answers? Oh, no.
You know, that's some of what we look for when we're actually vetting the technologies is how much runway do you have? You know, can you sustain a government sales cycle? Now, we've had tremendous success in helping companies land actual proof of concepts and paid engagements within a couple of months of graduation, which is phenomenal. But of course, I'm not spending the government's money, so I can't guarantee that. So it is a business decision, and you do it for the long haul. You do it for those long-term gains because the contract size is typically a lot larger. The federal government's not going to go out of business, so they will always pay you. So there's a lot of benefit of doing that. And then, you know, there's just the pure mission of it. You know, knowing that you went in, now you're protecting the government. There's something to that. So, you really need to take a tough look at why you want to do it. Kind of like I said earlier, you don't just dabble in government because it's not going to get you. If you're short on cash, this probably isn't the market to go to.
Let's take a break. Come back. Talk more about startups and the government, innovation and change. And at your website, one of the phrases you use is accelerating innovation into the government. So maybe focus on that in the next block. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of Decode 42. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of a company called Decode 42. Kind of tough to convey that on the radio. It's D-C-O-D-E 42, the numerals, .com. And they have a presence on Twitter as well. It's at DCCode 42 underscore DC. Is that correct?
Just the DC right after the number.
Okay, Decode 42 DC on Twitter. That's good. So we're talking about innovation in the federal government right before the break. I quoted from your website, and you said we accelerating innovation into the government. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so the idea is how do we find those emerging technologies that can impact the mission and the outcomes of the government and get them there quickly? So when we work with technology companies, you know, the first thing, actually, let me back up a step. We pick our themes for the programs that we run by sitting down with federal CIOs with the larger partners.
Ah, you listen. Wow.
Yeah, that's a shocking idea, I know.
It is. No one does that. Yeah. I mean, you're not the greatest? You don't have all the answers?
I wish I had all the answers, but, you know, really put our ears to the ground. What are you working on? What problems are you trying to solve? And they're very different across the board, but what you start to notice is a type of technology that could potentially support those problems. So, you know, one of the reasons that we ran artificial intelligence is there's problems at HHS, around health and predicting, you know, outcomes and diseases and things like that. And then there's things over in DOD around how do we protect ourselves against our adversaries and kind of everything in between where there's an application of it. So we pick our theme based on the needs of the government, the needs of the larger ecosystem too. So we include partners in that discussion. And then when we are working with the technologies, one of the ways we help them get there faster is kind of what we hit on earlier, John, which is what problem do you actually solve? And every technology, we encourage them to pick, you know, three or four use cases or problems that they really can go after and then identify what agencies are working on those problems. And from there, you can build out marketing and messaging and let's make sure your pricing structure is there. And all the things that you need to do that could usually take you 18 months, we cram that into 3 months. And we bring in a lot of subject matter experts, and it's, you know, very in the weeds, and we move very fast, and we hopefully just get them there much more quickly than they would have otherwise.
I just finished a graduate course in digital strategy at Georgetown, and my first 2 weeks listening, and I give them very specific ways to listen and books to read to listen and understand and try to figure out the problem before you waltz in there and go, hey, I can do everything for everybody. So I think it's a real practical approach. One concern that I have is that, you know, one day you're talking to someone about encryption, the next day it's about healthcare records, the next day it's about cloud, the next day it's about messaging. So how do you keep up? I mean, what do you read to keep up on top of this, Megan? Is it just all there naturally, or do you have it like, I don't know, how do you do it?
No, you know, I wish, but, you know, the rate at which technology changes, I can read something tomorrow and it's going to completely change my whole understanding of everything I've learned to date. So a couple of things. I mean, one, we have some folks on our team that are dedicated to tech scouting. So they are constantly out looking at technology.
Like a baseball scout, huh?
Yeah. They're constantly engaging with the venture capital community and the startup communities. We do events in Austin and San Francisco. We're going to do an event in Chicago. We've done one in New York. And so a lot of it's conversation. I encourage the government, too, to get out of your office. And you're not going to understand technology sitting inside your cube. You can only Google so much, right? Read the tech publications from Wired to TechCrunch, and there's, we talked about blockchain. There's a whole industry of things you can read on just blockchain itself. So, we try to stay up to speed on that. The other part of it is I personally don't need to be an expert in all these technologies.
What?
That's where our network, I know, shocking, although I wish I was. That would be something else. I might not be sitting here.
And Bill Gates would be smoking cigars somewhere, right? You know everything.
But we have a tremendous network. And we have people on our team that are very technical. And then we have, anytime we run a theme, we find those industry experts and those subject matter experts that come in and also work with us to vet technologies, help them understand how to translate it. And we're largely coming at it from a business problem. So what can your technology, what mission, business problem can it solve inside the government?
And so you have a demo day coming up. And so if you are a govy and you got a problem you can't figure out at transportation, what they might want to do is go to your website, figure out when the next demo day is, and say, well, maybe I'll waltz down there and near a metro stop and just, shut my big mouth and look around, see what's going on, and see four or five different solutions, and maybe three are bad. Maybe they're all bad. Maybe one has potential. When I go to these demo days, a lot of times I'm standing there watching someone. I'm sitting next to someone like Megan. I go, well, what do you do? And you go down a different direction. So it's or maybe the person who's demonstrating it says, this is the absolute best solution for all diesel motor cars. And it turns out it applies to gasoline cars as well. But they don't see that. So the demo day is a really nice way to interact, isn't it?
Absolutely. And all of our demo days are free for government to attend. And a lot of it is so there can be that exchange of conversation. So we do a couple things at our demo days. We'll have keynote speakers come in. We typically try to do some sort of panel or flash briefing from agencies that have been successful implementing those types of technologies. Because one thing that we run into as Decode, it's been a very interesting byproduct of what we do, is we have agencies asking us what other organizations are doing in the same field. Because it's hard to connect.
It's hard to know what's going on.
The government's a huge, huge market. So, we'll put people up on stage that maybe have actually implemented an artificial intelligence solution, and here are the pain points that they had, and here's the success. And then they get to see the companies, and it's fast. We drop the mic on them. They got 5 minutes to tell you what they do, what problems they solve, and, how you can start engaging with them. And then afterwards, it's networking. So, we have a lot of agencies that connect with each other, and then the technologies, you know who to send to the events because they're centered around the themes. So our upcoming ones around developer tools and platforms, digital transformation, you just mentioned that. So anyone in organizations that are building better, websites for engaging citizens, anyone working on DevOps, anything like that, it's going to be a really, really interesting one to come to.
In my previous interview, I had three different people in the studio, and we talked about three flavors of DevOps. Because it's so confusing, people don't really know. And for example, what about Microsoft and DevOps? We talked about Microsoft. What about products like Chef? We talked about them. What about the community in town here? And I think what's happening is many of my students are seeing some of the limitations of using their phone and searching for the answers in the phone. Maybe it should be combined with face-to-face and looking someone in the eye and seeing where it might apply. And there's so many areas, I think, where the govies can get out of their shell, and people from Waltham, Massachusetts can get out of their shell too and say, well, I have this, and it solves this problem, and a govie can go, nope, not for me, next. And so what? Yeah. It's good.
Yeah, it's great. And you look at organizations like the Digital Service or 18F, since we're talking about DevOps and software development. And, I know a lot of people that have served on those teams, some people that are still there, very close with a lot of those teams. And one thing that I hear, though, is, they come from Google. They come from these organizations where they've done this and they've done this well. They don't have the tools they need inside the government to necessarily be effective in doing that. So part of our job is connecting that business problem, that culture shift of going to DevOps, for example, and the tools, and bring that all together in a single spot so they can have a real conversation and then hopefully do something, and really move forward. So I'm a big proponent, and one thing that we are just constantly pushing for is, let's talk about these emerging technologies. Let's do something.
I think one person to watch is a guy named Matt Cutts. two T's in the first name, two T's in the last name. In the digital marketing world, he was the oracle of Silicon Valley. I mean, you would just live and die by whatever he had to say about SEO. Whatever Matt says, you have to do. Whatever Matt says, because they trust him, they liked him, he's conversational. Now, look at him. He's in the federal government. And we'll see how he takes and can take and use innovation, which obviously he can do innovation upside down, how he can apply it in the federal government and how compliance ties his hands or not. But he's going to be a good case study for all this, isn't he?
Yeah. One of our advisors, came from private sector, did a stint inside the government, kind of focusing on technology transformation, and, has since left and loved the mission, loved the value that they could bring in the input, but challenges. The bureaucracy is just a very different environment to work in. So we talk about compliance, but we also have policies and culture. And when I say culture, there's policies that have become adopted just because it's a cultural thing, but it's not necessarily something you have to follow. And then there's laws that you have to follow, and there's a difference. And trying to weed through that, and we hear a lot of people call themselves bureaucracy hackers, if you will. It will be interesting to see how he tackles some of that, because you can read about it, and until you experience it, it's something completely different.
Yeah, that guy doesn't lack brains and drive. And so I'm going to be fascinated to see what happens with his career here. Let's take a break, come back, talk more about innovation in the federal government. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of Decode 42. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of a company called Decode 42. And if you're listening in your car on the radio, you type in D-C-O-D-E, numeral 4, numeral 2.com and get all kinds of stuff, learn about demo days coming up. And the focus here with her company is accelerating innovation into the government. We've gone back and forth and back and forth on this, and positives and negatives. And so what about a sales cycle? In the commercial world, your quota is $5 million a year and your sales manager is twisting your arm every day. What's your forecast? 60, 90 days. In the federal government, 60, 90 days, ha! And so what about the sales cycle? What advice do you give people who have innovative solutions to the federal government and want to connect with govies? It's so long. What do you say to them?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So earlier in our chat, I talked about, working with the board and the leadership from this technology companies to understand that why they want to go in the government. And part of that is also understanding the impact it has on your sales team. So, one thing that we say, if this is a new market, don't set a quota out of the gate, because, otherwise you're going to burn and churn through your sales teams very quickly. There's kind of a running, I won't call it a joke because it's not necessarily funny, there's some truth to it, but be sales guy number three for an emerging technology company in federal government, because the first guy's going to come in, he's going to lay the groundwork. He'll start to get some traction, but he won't meet his quotas. And every quarter, the board's going to say what happened. Yep, gone.
Cut him.
The second guy will take that, convert them into some proof of concepts, get a little bit of traction, but still not meet the number. Gone.
Gone.
Third guy makes it rain. So, I think you need to be a little bit prepared for that as a leader of someone in an organization that's managing the sales teams, to understand that's going to take some time and it's going to take some traction. The other thing is, we try to work with some of the agencies to help them understand those are the small differences in the way that you do business that could have a huge impact on the companies that want to work with the government, and make, they might decide to leave the government because of that inability to have visibility into the process. DHS does a great job of this in their Silicon Valley Innovation Program, where they provide a level of transparency into what they're doing. So in that program in particular, they say up front, there's going to be, if you are selected, send in your paper. If you are selected within X amount of time, we'll bring you in for a oral presentation. And with that day, you will know if you got the award or not.
Wow, that's
incredible.
Wonderful.
So even just knowing where you are in the process is hugely helpful. And an increased level of communication from the contracting teams and the program offices on the status. Because put yourself in a sales guy's shoe. You have to go back and say, hey, how's that deal with USDA coming? I have no idea.
Have I heard that before?
I have no idea. Well, aren't you working it? I've called everyone and everyone just told me to shove off because it's
right
in source selection. They can't talk to me.
Now what?
That poor guy
is fired.
Going to get in trouble.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So, I think there needs to be some mechanisms inside each agency to help create that level of transparency, because that's you know, huge for those companies. But then the companies on the same token, because the government's hard to change, need to be prepared and support their sales guys in doing that.
Turn the tables here from the startup to a Govee, someone working in a project management, federal government, maybe one of the CIOs or someone, and they're trying to, what can they do to reach out and learn new technologies, new answers, and new companies? What do you think they should do?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of tech tourism as a broad term. I think you need to get out to some of the trade shows, of course.
Outside the Beltway?
Outside of the Beltway. But, you know, there's a lot of misperception that you can't talk to or can't engage with vendors because you're showing preferential treatment. But there, you know, that's largely taken out of context, where I think sitting down with companies, whether you can do that through Decode. So when we do every program that we run, we bring in anywhere from 20 to 30 agencies that sit with our companies, and they actually share their problems, almost a reverse pitch about what their agency is working on in their mission. So having a non-sales oriented discussion with companies about what they're doing and how work is going about, what are they doing in artificial intelligence, is hugely helpful. And be very upfront, say this is or this is not an opportunity, so that startup knows where to spend their time and effort. The other thing is, when you're putting out actual procurement, if you want a more diverse set of companies that are going to bid on it, think outside the box. The people that have the emerging technologies in artificial intelligence are not reading FBO. They're not going there.
Right, they're not. Inside the Beltway, they sure are. But in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they're not.
They're not. So can you almost use marketing, and that's kind of has a bad connotation inside the government, but for some agencies, but can you get an article in TechCrunch or Wired, or, you know, get out and
that's turning the table, isn't it? Maybe the CEO should get an article saying, here's what's coming up in the next 3 years. This is the problems we have to solve. Decreasing budget, move to the cloud, concerns, what can you do to help?
Yeah, and there's several agencies, National Geospatial Intelligence, Homeland Security, DOD, of course, GSA even has an office out in Silicon Valley. A lot of them are staying them up in Austin and Boston to start engaging with those communities. And we'll see, time will tell how effective those are at bringing in new tech. But I think, nothing else, it's getting the word out. There's real problems to solve here.
Okay, let's play a little Jeopardy here. And the category is, what's hot and what's not? And in order to win, you got to give us five topics in the federal government of what's hot and what's not. Go, Megan.
Oh, boy.
Give us five for what? We know five AI is hot. That's one, huh?
Yeah, of course, artificial intelligence. Of course, we've talked plenty today about blockchain.
That's two.
I would still say cloud is hot.
It is. I mean, you can't deny it.
You know, it's here. It's not going anywhere. And, this new administration, of course, is putting out an even bigger push towards cloud first, which we've been working on for a while. IoT, I put IoT in that category. And then, big data, advanced analytics, very closely tied to artificial intelligence, but it's still a pretty hot topic. Cyber's not going anywhere anytime soon.
No, and I think there's music, there's fusion, different Latin and some of this and different types of music. And I think there's a fusion there. I think the fusion I see is going to be with security and data visualization and security and blockchain. And so they'll take two different sources. They'll take a Latin rhythm and some kind of an Irish tune and combine it, and you get something. Well, finally, this solves the problem. I mean, maybe, and I think the data visualization is so important to solve these problems, because people can all of a sudden, oh, yeah, so that's it, bang, and move on. And it's a combination of different things.
Yep, those themes are definitely not clean cut. So we, to give an example, we had a fantastic company called Bay Dynamics. It's a cybersecurity
B-A-Y, Bay Dynamics?
Bay Dynamics.
B-A-Y,
okay. But they were in our analytics cohort.
Aha! Uh-huh.
Because it's cyber analytics. And similarly, in our artificial intelligence, they were focused on some insider threat because of the tools that they have. And so you see a lot of crossover. We actually have a company in our upcoming cohort that has artificial intelligence on top of a blockchain. It's all related. It's all mashed together.
You know, last time I was in LA, I saw a food truck that had Korean tacos.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's a fusion of something. I mean, there's got to be a way, because I think the current way we're trying to do it is failing. It's designed when there was an eyedropper of water coming in, and now there's a fire hose. I mean, not that there's IoT. There's just so much information. You can't use the stuff that we used even 6 months ago to understand it. There's got to be new ways, and you got to borrow from somewhere.
And this kind of hits, this kind of hits straight on my soapbox, which is, what's your problem? Maybe it's artificial intelligence that solves it. Maybe it's not. So if agencies focus first, or even the prime contractors focus first on what problem are you trying to solve, instead of saying, I want to go out and I want to do blockchain, then you're going to have much better success, because maybe you're trying to force fit a square peg into a round hole to use blockchain to solve a problem that, you know, really something else is the better solution for.
Or maybe because it's trendy.
Yep, I see a lot of that.
And by the way, I guarantee you, if you walk into Kansas City, it's not going to be very sexy to do business with the federal government. It just isn't. It's not. Hey, forget about that. I'm going to go sell to the guy next door, or the people in Chicago, where the money is. Show me the money. Oh, New York. I'm going to New York. And I don't worry about these people in D.C. They're losers. I mean, it's the ones. And so that's another, I think, that's a perception that people have in the market, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of that, because the perception is that it's a lot of work, and that's not necessarily wrong. People will turn away. There's also what we have found has been really interesting with the companies that come to the program. They largely understand that there is a difference also in politics and government. When you start getting into more rural areas, sometimes they don't necessarily understand that distinction, which is obviously they're correlated. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of amazing civil servants that are solving problems for, you know, the citizens of the country and our national security that have nothing to do with the administration and vice versa. So.
And I lived next door to one for 20 years, and this guy worked really hard. And that's the big secret of the federal government, too, is that there are people who do have emotional ties and professional to being successful. And a lot of my listeners like that way, but they're not getting represented very well in the media. And so, hey, I don't want to beat on that. Well, we're running out of time here, Megan, unfortunately. I want to thank my guest today, Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of Deco42. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner at the Oakmont Group. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Federal Tech Talk.